Chapter 10. On Station. Adrift. Fratricide. Wayland put the Storm Eagle into a slow leftwards bank, keeping a constant 1,000 meters between him and Lerner 212. Medjuson Stormbird copied his turn, holding to his right wing on his rear quarter. He kept his altitude lower than the platform, knowing the distortion effects of the platform's vast banks of repulsors would keep both gunships from the prying Auspects aboard the Alpha Legion ships. The slate on the avionics panel was awash with data inloads, a mixture of Vox traffic analysis by the Kryptos, the electromagnetic emissions surrounding Lerner 212, and his own backscatter subroutine and inloaded surveyor sweeps from the Sisyphium. His divided consciousness processed them all. The Alpha Legion strike cruiser had recently launched a gunship, and transmissions passing between the vessels overhead had just spiked with activity. Half a dozen fire raptors were detaching from their normal combat patrols to escort the gunship to Lerner 212. Only one conclusion presented itself. Alpharius was inbound. The corollary of that extra volume of transmission was an increase in baseline encryption. Sure enough, the Kryptos now had enough comparative datasets to interpolate the strike cruiser's designation. "The Sigma?" said Wayland in surprise. He scanned back through the archives of his eidetic memory of ship rosters and fleet registries.
"Keel laid in the Bakan graving docks," said Wayland. "Part of the 455th Expeditionary Fleet under the nominal command of Shipmaster Solvig. Fleet affiliation revoked several years ago on the orders of Legate Kaitin of the 20th Legion, just prior to the Istvan atrocity. No extant records since then."
The avionics panel chimed a proximity alarm. Wayland ignored it, as he had ignored it every few minutes over the past few hours. Without the particular modifications he and Thematica had made to the Storm Eagle, Medjuson's pilot was finding it difficult to keep a precise distance. Now that his attention was fixed on the avionics panel, Wayland saw his backscatter subroutine had completed its analysis of the battle between the Sisyphium and the Zeta Malquiant. He caught the data to the front of the slate, angling his turn in towards Lerner 212 as the Storm Eagle registered the ghost of an Auspects pass. The spectroscopic analysis of the anomalous electromagnetic trace he'd detected during the battle was a step signal that was too regular and too persistent to be anything other than something deliberately generated.
"A highly individual signature," said Wayland, thinking aloud. "Something proprietary and tailored for a specific legion or auxiliary force, perhaps."
Only when his gaze strayed onto the upper reaches of the panel did he understand its true purpose. Partially hidden by the data pane was the passive inload of electromagnetic emissions filling the air above Lerner 212. The signal was an exact match for the energies keeping the Alpha Legion ships secured in perfect geosynchrony.
"It was a bloody EMAG tether," he said,
and the only logical conclusion was suddenly and horrifyingly clear. The avionics panel chimed again. Cybus had seen Primarchs before, and knew what it was to be face to face with the godlike being. Ferus Manus had been the lord of stone and metal, a master of industrial labours, not a soot-smeared smiter. Primarch Gilliman was a hero of ancient times, carved from ivory and wrought in golden light. Even Fulgrim, before his treachery, had been mighty. Alpharius was, by contrast, something of a disappointment. Yes, he was taller, broader, and obviously more powerful than Cybus, but in a way that suggested it would still be worth a wager on the outcome of any bout between them. Beyond the negligible height difference, any one of his warriors could claim to be Alpharius, and Cybus would be none the wiser. The Primarch carried his helm in the crook of his elbow, and his exposed features were ruddy and bronzed with health. Dark hair, hooded eyes, full lips, curled in wry amusement. A coiled serpent tattoo around his left eye, and, barely visible above the line of his gorget, a scar in the shape of a reversed ultima. And yet there was something about him, a radiance that came from the eyes, a charisma that made Cybus want to stand taller and kneel in the same instant. He fought the latter urge until he realized he was already kneeling.
"My lord," he said, "welcome to Learner 212.
"Get up," said Alpharius.
Cybus did so, skin reddening at how easily he had been made Alpharius's dog, and not even known it.
"Who else is here?"
asked Alpharius, his hand resting on the leather-wound grip of a plainly formed line gladius.
"My lord,"
said Cybus.
"Don't be coy, Sergeant Daraka,"
said Alpharius, his fingers tightening on the grip of his sword. "I know there are two vessels hidden in orbit with Irene Septimus.
Tell me which of them is it?"
The name Alpharius had used for Cybus confused him until he realized the Primarch had read the visual tagging of his armor.
"Which of who?"
he asked. Alpharius looked over his shoulder at Thoic and smiled.
"You know, don't you?"
"Aye, my lord," said Thoic. "I know."
Branthan was still alive, but that was about all Tarsa would venture. Slathered in gore to the waist, his arms and face were thick with the captain's blood. The last 2 hours had drained him to the point of exhaustion. His every instinct had been to let Branthan die, to allow this great warrior the dignity of oblivion, and let the bird's inexplicable actions mark an end to his suffering. But Ulrak Branthan wasn't about to give up on life. He fought for it, as any iron hand would. He clawed for it, refusing to be drawn into death's final embrace. Tarsus' oaths as an apothecary forbade him to be a bystander in such a battle, and the captain's will to endure had, against his better judgment, left him no choice but to fight alongside him. Whatever the bird had done to the casket could not be undone, and Tarsa fought with every scrap of knowledge gained on the Imperium's battlefields to keep the captain alive. From the outset, he'd known it was a fight he couldn't win. The captain's wounds were too deep, too mortal and too many. The stasis field refused to re-engage, and the temperature within the cryo casket rose steadily with every passing minute. Garuda had been thorough in its dismantling of the apparatus keeping Branthan alive, in all but one respect. The heart of iron remained clamped to the captain's chest, its monofilament wires now girdling his entire torso. The mass-reactive wounds on Branthan's chest were entirely submerged beneath a weave of fine silver mesh. His lifeblood seeped at an ever-increasing pace from his ruptured limbs. His heart rate was spiking on the cusp of colossal rupture, and his blood pressure plunged to the nadir of survivability. And he still refused to die. Tarsa eventually stopped the bleeding and brought the captain's vitals back to a level that wasn't immediately fatal. Even as he'd pulled the captain back from death, he'd known that, without something more permanent, it was a temporary respite at best. Sooner or later, Branthan's ruined flesh would succumb. That had left him with only one choice. He still wasn't sure he'd made the right one. Tarsa withdrew to the adjacent antechamber, leaving the Sisypheum's 3-part functional Medicae servitors to work alongside the dozen others he'd summoned from Frater Thematica's workshop. Their labours were not quiet, and nor were they subtle, but they offered the best chance of survival for Captain Branthan. Pneuma hammers beat metal, and crackling arc welders seamed massive plates of adamantium together. His medical expertise and familiarity with the mysteries of steel would be needed soon enough, but for the moment he had time to reflect on what he'd done and its repercussions. Tarsa washed the blood from his forearms at the deep basin normally used for surgical preparation. Boiling water washed clots of gelatinous Laraman-clogged blood from his ebony skin. The pain of it was tremendous, and Tarsa gripped the basin's edge, hard enough to buckle the metal as he let out a shuddering breath. Garuda flew in on clattering wings of gold and silver. It landed on its usual perch of the empty oxygen cylinders and let out another grating metallic caw. In reproach or approbation, Tarsa couldn't tell.
"Shut up, damn you!"
he yelled, curling his hands into fists. The bird cawed again, and Tarsa wanted to smash it to fragments, to rip the wings from its body and stamp its ancient mechanisms beneath his boot. He quelled his hate with the mantras of smiting taught to every son of Nocturne, letting their repetitive, soothing cadences smooth the jagged edges that threatened to overturn his reason. Tarsa's time with the Iron Hands had taught him that hatred's pull was stronger than almost any other emotion, and only by virtue of his Nocturnian stoicism did he turn from it.
"Revenge, is it poison? Not a balm," said Tarsa,
letting out a shuddering breath that tasted of his birthrock's volcanic air. Tarsa ignored the bird and returned to the mortuary slab that still bore the corpse of the Alpha Legionnaire killed aboard the Morgeld. The machinery he'd set in motion had finished long ago, winking green lights attesting to his preoccupation. In lieu of anything else to do, Tarsa flipped the switch on the inset data slate and studied the results of the genetic sequences. With every line of scrolling text, Tarsa's horror mounted as the truth of the dead body became numbingly apparent.
"Oh, Throne, no. It's impossible,"
he said, pushing himself away from the slab as though distance would make the findings of the machines less repugnant.
"It's impossible."
Tarsa gripped the edge of the slab, now seeing the truth of the warrior's severed arm.
"You didn't lose it," he said. "You surrendered it willingly."
His breath felt trapped in his lungs, his physiology as strained as Branthan's had been in his last moments.
"I need to run the tests again,"
he said, already knowing such tests would just confirm what they had already revealed.
"There must have been some specimen contamination. Yes, that must be it. It has to be. I need to know this isn't true."
The genetic data did not lie. Every test confirmed the same thing independently of one another. The warrior on the slab was not an Alpha Legionnaire. He was an Iron Hand. Wayland put the Storm Eagle into a screaming climb. It shuddered as he drove it through the squalling geomagnetic fields of Lerna 212's repulsor field. A risky manoeuvre, but this couldn't wait.
"Tyro, this is Wayland!" he yelled into the vox. "Can you hear me?"
The speaker burred with static, thick with distortion.
"Come on, come on!"
he hissed at the vox, willing Tyro to answer swiftly.
"This is Tyro. What is it, Freighter?"
"You have to get out of there, Cadmus," said Wayland. "It's a trap!"
"What? Say again?"
"The Malquiant. It was on an EMAG tether,"
said Wayland, the words pouring out of him in a rush.
"Someone else was remote piloting it. That's why it flew over too fast and high."
"What are you talking about, Wayland?"
"The electromagnetic distortion being thrown out by the Morgel's destruction broke the tether between the Malquiant and whoever was controlling it."
He heard only silence in response, and hoped that meant Cadmus Tyro was simply digesting what he'd told him. The other option was too terrible to contemplate.
"Who?"
asked Tyro.
"The Iron Heart," said Wayland. "They were the only vessel close enough. That's why Medjuson intervened when he did, to blow Malqui into atoms so we wouldn't board it and see it didn't have a crew."
Again the maddening pause before Tyro answered.
"Medjuson? Why would he do such a thing?"
"So we would trust him, to make us believe he was on our side. He put us in his debt by telling us that we'd ruined his plans, and then told us what we wanted to hear. A mission we couldn't refuse."
He let the inescapable truth of that sink in before continuing.
"This whole endeavor, it's a lie. They used us to find this place, to bring them here. Why would Medjuson lie to us?
Before Wayland could answer, the Storm Eagle's avionics panel lit up with threat warnings. Blood-red icons illuminated, and a screeching wail of a combat alarm blared.
Missile lock! Missile lock!
Thoic stepped past Cybus and addressed his words to Alpharius.
Who do you think is waiting for you? Asked Thoic.
Alpharius narrowed his eyes as though he might be able to see through Thoic's helm to the burn-scarred face of the warrior beneath.
You're not Skolava, said Alpharius.
No,
agreed Thoic.
I'm not.
You're one of his, aren't you? Sean.
Thoic gave a short bow.
At your service, Legate Kaitin.
Cybus gripped Thoic's shoulder guard.
What was he talking about?
He demanded.
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about a betrayal of trust, said Thoic,
with a nod towards Alpharius.
His mainly, but also mine.
Thoic spun on his heel, and his gladius was a blur of Medusan steel. It opened Cybus's throat back to the spine. Sharokin watched Cybus die through the scope of his rifle. He saw the catastrophic blood spray, watched the warrior of the Vernii fall with his hands at his neck, but still couldn't believe it. Thoic followed up his murderous betrayal by leaping to attack Alpharius. Gunfire erupted as the new arrivals and the disguised Iron Hands opened fire. Mass reactives at close range were messy. With no time to arm, each round became a subsonic bludgeon. The arithmetic of a firefight was brutally direct, and the outcome of this one was entirely predictable. Gavril's shock at what Thoic had done cost him his life. He fell in a lake of his own blood as three rounds tore away his right arm, ribcage, and pelvis. Radek killed two Alpha Legionnaires, then died in a storm of impacts, his armor cracked open and hydraulic shock dragging the blood from his heart in a scarlet deluge. Oleg had his pistol out and fired three shots before he was gunned down. Two of his targets died with him. Vedran threw himself into the midst of the duel. He thrust at Thoic, but it was a clumsy, rage-fueled blow and lacked precision. Thoic trapped the blade against his side and hammered a fist into Vedran's helmet. His former comrade-in-arms reeled from the blow. Thoic spun behind him and drove his blade up through the back of his neck and into his skull. Alpharius took a step back and fired a volley of mass reactives that blasted Vedran apart. Thoic dropped the ruptured mass of his human shield and threw himself at Alpharius before he could shoot again. Sharokin watched their blades clash in glittering arcs. Both warriors were skilled, and as Sharokin watched Thoic fight, he understood the source of his earlier disquiet. The warrior fighting Alpharius wasn't Septus Thoic. He was faster than Thoic ever was, and Thoic was one of the Sisypheum's best with a blade. Medjuson claimed to have infiltrated Tyro's ship, but only now did Sharokin realize just how literally he'd meant. Septus Thoic had died aboard the Zeta Morgeld, and the warrior Medjuson had returned to the Sisypheum was an impostor, one who wore Thoic's face and possessed his memories. Knowing how such a feat could be achieved sent a wave of nausea through Sharokin.
Oh, damn it, Tyro. I told you not to do this,
he whispered, watching the two fighting warriors through his scope.
Similar fighting styles, fundamentals you both learn from the same master, which makes you both viable targets.
He centered his sights on Alpharius, slowing his breathing and letting his instincts follow the ebb and flow of combat. Every duel was a lethal dance that moved to a particular rhythm. Chaotic and unpredictable, to be sure, but if a shooter understood its grammar, then a shot into a furious combat was entirely possible. Sharokin waited, his finger loose on the trigger. External sensory input fell away until all he saw and felt were the targets before him. He understood the rhythm of this combat and let his target come to him. A head drifted into his sights, and he squeezed the trigger. And a tripartite cluster of razor-edged needle shards punched through the orbit of Alpharius's right eye. They shattered on impact, hundreds of fragments ripping through the skull's vault in an expanding cone that pulped brain tissue to grey-pink gruel. Alpharius collapsed instantly, and Thoic dived for cover as the surviving Alpha Legionnaires ran to their fallen leader. Medjuson's warriors appeared at the edge of the platform, flensing the landing platform with murderously accurate bolter fire. Sharukin switched his aim to Thoic, but in that instant of disconnect between shots, he heard the roar of incoming jets. His position was compromised. Two fire raptors were racing to his position. No time to wonder how they'd found him. Sharukin sprang to his feet and slung the needle rifle over his shoulder. He blinked away the disorientating shift in perspective from gunsight to normal vision. At 50 meters out, the gunship's centerline Avenger cannons spooled up to fire. Sharukin sprinted to the edge of the vent tower. Twin hurricanes of fire brayed from the gunship's dipped prows. Hellstrikes streaked from their wing pylons. Sharukin leapt from the tower as its summit vanished in a sheeting blaze of explosive fire.